For our Historians Report this month, we're excited to have a chance to sit down with one of the individuals who will be inducted into our NEFB Hall of Fame in November, and that's Mark Oppold. First of all, congratulations to you, Mark. We're looking forward to November.
I've been blessed. I will say that from the beginning. I've been blessed to do what I've always loved to do, and that's radio. I knew from an age of probably 10 or 12 years old, and you can relate to this, I'm sure, as many of the broadcasters listening that spent a lot of time on the tractor or the combine, and you had a radio in there, and sort you'd find your station, be it a sports station or a country music station or whatever it might be. And for me, growing up in northern Iowa, we listened to the Minnesota Twins. That was a station, WCCO, just banged in there big, loud, and clear. So I'm listening day after day out in the field in 90-degree weather, and listening to the Twins games, and I said, you know, those guys are to watch baseball every day, call the games, and they're off in the October, and they can go to the wherever they want to go in the wintertime where it's warm, and then pick it back up in February for spring training. I said, boy, that'd be a great thing to do. And so that was my early on. My dream was to be a play-by-play baseball announcer. So radio was, from the very beginning, kind of where I wanted to end up. Well, to answer your question, going back memory lane, my first opportunity came at KMMJ, Grand Island, Nebraska. They were looking for a farm broadcaster. And the other half of that story is that I was recommended Kirkpatrick, who at that time was the dean of farm broadcasters from WHO Des Moines. His daughter, Carmen, and my I dated Kathy Anderson at the time. They were in the same sorority at the University of Iowa. And growing up listening to Keith, I found out she was daughter of Keith Kirkpatrick. Got to meet him, homecoming, parents' weekend, those kind of things, Dad's Day. And, boy, it was a treat. Probably the first, quote, celebrity that I really was looking forward to meeting and talking to. Well, fast forward to my senior year, he said, Mark, have you ever thought about farm broadcasting? I said, no. I said, Keith, I have had enough Iowa cold winters and thawing out waters and hot sun and, you know, baling hay. He said, I want to do radio, but thank you very much. He said, well, if I hear something, can I give me your name? And I said, sure. You know how that goes. I said, yeah, absolutely. Well, he did to the manager at KMMJ, and the guy called me. Rex Lathan was his name. He called me about 2 months before I was going to graduate. Gruffy old guy, he said, I got a call from Keith Kirkpatrick. We need a farm broadcaster. And he said, we should take a look at you. You're a fine young man. You want to come out? And I said, yes, sir. I sure do. Thank you very much. So I went out to Grand Island, Nebraska. They hired me on the spot. And I started a week after my graduation in January of 1973. So, and this has been, so obviously we're 51 years later, and looking forward to this honor, Hall of Fame, and the Lord had his plan for me, and that's how
it's funny how the path takes us, isn't it? So from Grand Island, you went to WMT, right?
I did, yeah, you know, and I felt bad at the time because they did hire me I was so green, man. My sister still lives in Grand Island, and her husband has passed away, but Glenn, her husband, taped my first program, and I'm sure glad that audio tape doesn't exist anymore, because I hate to hear what I sounded like that first time on the air. But they hired this green hand out of Iowa, but I had an opportunity. I visited with, was it a DeKalb Seed Day? You were familiar with those way back when.
And yeah.
Ron Michelson was there and Jerry Passer. And we rode back from there back towards Cedar Rapids. Little did I know that they were interviewing me while giving me this ride there as a third man on their team. And I got back to Grand Island and got a call from Bill Alford. All these names come up, and he said, Ron and Jerry had a great visit with you and like to have you come out and take a look at our station. And, you know, growing up in Iowa Central, I was going back to Iowa, so I took the job after about 10, 11 months, really, at KMMJ. But I felt bad about leaving so soon, but going back to my home state and a major station, WHO was, of course, the king in Iowa, and right behind that, WMT certainly had their hand in eastern Iowa, and television went with that. So it was a great move for me to bring Kathy and I, just newly married, back to Cedar Rapids, back to Iowa, and landed as the third man on a great department there at WMT Radio and TV. So that lasted over 10 years. Had a chance to, in fact, I was there the day that the Helming Report went on the air. Ralph Seeley is another name that some of these listeners here might remember that name. Ralph Seeley started the Helming Report, and he was needing a second man in Kansas City. So it seemed like a time for me. Bill Alford had just named Jerry Passer farm director, and so I knew Jerry was going to be there for quite a long time, and that was okay. But this is an opportunity to, I guess, for me, take the next step, become a broadcaster, assistant broadcaster for a syndicated national radio program. So we moved to Kansas City in 1982.
For those that aren't familiar with the Helming Report, it was a unique program. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was, Don. And we took it at WMT. I think we were one of the first stations to carry the program. Bill Helming was a consultant at a consulting business in Kansas City, and he had some major clients, you know, like a lot of feed yards. A member of Pizza Hut was one of theirs that they used, the Helming Group. And they had a lot of, I'm going to call, like, excess data that they didn't use for the client, but they had to research and get that information to finalize, you know, bottom line what the client really wanted. So he had all this excess information, and lo and behold, that made me, and that's where Ralph Seeley came in and said, "Well, we could put a radio show together on this data that you've recovered." And what made it unique is that not a lot, but there were a few radio programs then that would do a little market report or a market commentary, if you will. Well, the Helming Report set itself apart, not only analyzing what was going on that day, but the Helming Group forecasted what they thought the markets would do the next day, and on Friday, what they might do overall the next week. And that was a niche that nobody else was doing that. And they had we kept score, if you will. That was one thing that was important to Bill Helming. And they were 73% accurate through the years that I was there with their forecast. For this was corn, beans, wheat, cattle, and hogs, feeder cattle. They didn't get into stocks or anything like that, gold, silver, but just the major commodities. So number one, it was accurate and hopefully usable for farmers and ranchers across the country. So that's what made it stand out, and it was, you know, very, very successful. So it was great to be part of that group and growing the network and programs across the country.
I remember distinctly the program. I worked at KLJR in Redwood Falls, Minnesota at the time, carried the Helming Report, and as a young green reporter, broadcaster, I reached out to one Mark Oppold to look for some input, and you were kind enough to listen to an air check and tell me what maybe I could have done better and improved upon. I'll never forget that. That was very cool.
Wow. Well, I must say that I do remember your track, you know, in Minnesota and KLGR taking the programs, great call letters there. So I don't remember exactly what I said, but hopefully it was helpful. Obviously, you're a Hall of Famer and own your own business now, Don. So
we're plugging along. Of course, yeah. Recent years, it's been you've been with RFD-TV up until your retirement a few years back. Tell me about that experience.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to say, when you say the word retirement, my wife says, you're not going to retire, you're going to redirect. So she calls it redirecting, not retiring. But I want to, in between that, if I may back up a little bit, Don, in Kansas City, while I was with the Helming Report, the WDAF in Kansas City had farmed George Stevens was the farm director, and he was toward the end of his career, and he would take trips with his wife, you know, cruises and other trips that he would sponsor and see it. So he came to me one time and he said, Mark, would you mind covering my markets for me while I'm gone? And I said, sure, George, I'd be glad to do that. It's great to be on the station. Well, unfortunately, he passed away 2 or 3 years later, and the station wanted me to continue. And that was just a real, I was on the air for another 17 years on WDAF doing the markets with the morning, and now I'm missing the name of the broadcaster who was there, gosh, having a senior moment, but I may think of it later. But
was that Mark Railsback?
They were, yes, there you go, thank you. Mike Railsback was the farm director eventually, but they kept me on the air because I was doing the morning show with this. David Lawrence was the morning man, number one rated in town, and he and I just clicked, had a chemistry that worked for 17 years, and it was just a great, great time. But as that ended, at the same time, AgriTalk came along, and they were, my bottom line report had gone away, a Helming report rather, and so I became part of AgriTalk doing the markets there with Ken Root and eventually Mike Adams. So I bring all those names up just because it's been a, quote, a Hall of Fame career working with men like that, Ken and Mike Adams. And at WMT, they brought in Jack Crowner. He was at a sister station. And they dropped their farm programming, so they brought him over to Cedar Rapids for about 5 years, and I've been able to work with Jack Crowner. So I'm going to fast forward and answer your question here. Yeah, RFD-TV came along at the right time. They were people like Mike Adams were doing their live programs for them. Every Monday night they did a Rural America Live, it was called. Tom Stever hosted that. Mike Hansen, and they were looking for a full-time host and news director at a time that it was time for me to be looking on, moving on. And so I got together with RFD-TV in 2008 and became their news director. And over the years that I was there, I figured out we did over 700 live shows, our RFD-TV Live and other reports from you know, farm shows and that sort of thing through the years. Had a chance at the time to one-on-one visit with President Trump, and that was after being part of the inaugural parade. That was a real highlight of the career. Our owner, Patrick Gotch, who passed away, unfortunately, recently, when Donald Trump was elected in 2016. He called the inaugural committee, talked to somebody, and said, you know what, rural America needs to be represented in the parade. We're one of the reasons that he's elected. And they didn't disagree. They said, well, what do you have in mind? And he said, well, I'd like to have 50 tractors, one for each state. And he said, well, we're not going to do that, but we'll keep going. And ended up, anyway, like 12 or 13 tractors. And they had various members of commodity organizations, you know, Farm Bureau, soybean, corn growers, et cetera, driving the tractors. Well, he came to me and said, Mark, you've been with me longer than anyone. I want you to drive one of the tractors in the parade. So here I am, 2017 inaugural parade, driving a tractor down Pennsylvania Avenue. It was a highlight, and waving to the new president. And then later that year, having a chance to interview him one-on-one at the Farm Bureau convention and again at FFA convention. So one of the AAs said, well, we'll allow three different entities, and Farm Bureau was one, of course, and Farm Bureau came to Patrick and said, we'd like the RFDTV to be the other. So again, wow. A lot of memories of at RFDTV and being in Nashville, you know, getting to meet some of the country artists that came to the studio to do interviews and get a chance to meet them. One real quick story on that regard, they had a reunion of Hee Haw at the studio, like a 50-year reunion. So all the ones that were still around and wanted to participate, well, walking down the hall, Roy Clark was going to one of the sessions. And I stopped him and I said, Mr. Clark, if I could just shake your hand and tell you how much I enjoyed, our family enjoyed watching Hee Haw growing up. He put his hand on my shoulder. He said, well, young man, I watched those reruns myself and I watched myself get younger. So that's a memory of meeting a man like Roy Clark. So great time at RFDTV.
Very cool. Am I correct? Do I recall this? Weren't you in station ownership at one point?
I was. Yeah, I had a chance to take over a station in Atchison, Kansas, and some good friends that carried the Helming Report and then carried the Bottom Line Report. And Don, I thought that was going to be the pinnacle of my career, was owning a radio station. It was a little 25,000 watt FM and 1,000 watt AM in Atchison, Kansas, just north of Kansas City, Leavenworth, in that area, right along the river. But you know what? you maybe relate to this. Spent a lot of days and a lot of hours doing FCC work then all the equal opportunities thing reports you have to do and budgets and payroll and taxes and programming. And, you know, I was doing everything except what I really loved to do, and that was on the air, being creative, and especially agriculture. And I did put some ag stuff on the air. But long story short, it turned out that it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And when I had an opportunity to sell the station, and that's basically when RFDTV came along. It was just, again, the Lord working and said, well, here, another one door closes, another one opens. And that's how it worked out for the best of for all.
Now, you were president in 2013, right? What were some of the highlights of that year, Mark?
Well, number one, it was we had heard the current office was just cramped. I mean, the NAFB was growing. Hadn't been that long before that they moved from the Twin Cities to a permanent office in Platte City, just outside of Kansas City. So they were looking for more space as they continued to grow. They were cramped. They didn't have any place for people to sit. They had a lot of historical data, files and things that they needed to have. And so Tom Stever was president the year before in 2012, and he and I were co-chaired the committee to find a new building for NAFB. So I'm pleased to say that the building they're in now, Tom Stever and I and Kyle Bohr, I'm missing the name here now again out of KFRM, Kyle Bauer, yeah, was a big help in putting that together and getting them at the office. And then simultaneous to that, almost there during the year, was hiring Tom Brand as our new executive director. That was quite a process to go through and listen to the different people, and we've just done that with Gardner and hiring a new one, and Tom has moved on, but realizing the process of listening to the people and their passion for agriculture, and there were some great candidates, but that was part of the year as president. And then planning the convention boy, I really got a new appreciation, and I'm sure you too, for when you plan your convention yourself and think back to the days when these farm broadcasters planned the whole thing. I mean, there was no real help. There was no office staff. Through the 70s and the 80s, early 80s too, I suppose, they were, whoever was president or a president-elect planned the convention, you know, and getting all the speakers and, you know, organizing with the hotels and, you know, all those kind of things. And but it was fun to put that together when I was president-elect. And one of the things I was happy about was the I wanted as many former secretaries of agriculture to come and relate, you know, kind of some of the things they were doing during their tenure. And did get three of them. That Bob Berglund came, and of course John Block was there, Clayton Yeider. So it was a great 3 years. I went to Patrick Gotch and said, Patrick, I'd like to consider running for leadership. And he said, Mark, you want to do it, I'll support you all the way, and go for it. So I had the support of RFD-TV all along the way as well. Great year. Great 3 years.
Yeah, definitely. You look back on 50-plus years, the business of farm broadcasting obviously has changed in that time. But if you look at it, that mission of serving that farm audience really hasn't. What advice would you give, or what skills do you see that are needed today in farm broadcasting?
Wow. Well, you know, it's such a, with the social media, I think, is something that I'm not very good at. And not because I don't understand it, it's just something that I, you know, have chosen, you know, not to really dive into, and being on Instagram and all those kind of things, and TikTok, and, you know, but I guess, and the farmers today have a lot of the young farmers. I talk about the average age, and I understand it's the average age is still there. What is it, Don, like 60, I don't know what it is, 62,
64, I think.
Is it now drop back? And so these younger farmers, they've embraced the social media, and I think farm broadcasters do need to do that. As if any quote advice would be to be active and have a blog along with your on air work, and you know, do social media outreach on behalf of your listeners too, and letting people around the country know what's going on, and you know, for your listeners in the area. That would be one thing. And I would have gotten a little heavier. I never really enjoyed getting into the legislative part, and I know a lot of broadcasters love. I didn't go every year, but I did enjoy going to Washington Watch and interviewing, talking to the congressmen and senators, and those especially on the Ag Committee and the Secretary of Agriculture. But I think that keeping that word out there in front and center of legislative issues that are important to agriculture, and how many regulations are impeding a lot of these farmers and ranchers from being more successful, you know, big EPA and all those different bureaucracies, you know, quite frankly, that make it harder and harder for them to run their business. For broadcasters to really dive into, hey, how can, you know, what's going on, and why is this happening, and how can it change to the betterment of rural America?
I love these conversations, sharing some of these memories and where we've come and where we're going. Any final thoughts, Mark, as we're all getting excited for November and the induction ceremonies, of course?
Well, yeah, one of the things that I will always love radio. I'm still doing the Bottom Line Report. It's the syndicated program. It doesn't forecast the next day like the Helming Report did. But it is a commentary that I contact three or four different sources on a daily basis and put together a commentary myself. So I love radio. I've been blessed in this business. I love speaking. I am I train lectors at our church, those men and women that are proclaiming the word, and they asked me to. They knew my background, so I'm training these lectors. I call bingo. I am the current deputy grand knight of our Knights of Columbus Council here in Camdenton, Missouri. I'm in central Missouri now, Lake of the Ozarks. And I am a member of the Knights of Columbus. I'm a deputy grand knight. And they found out I was in radio. So when I'm available, I call bingo at the Knights of Columbus. I did a 15 years, did a radio program for the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas called The Catholic Way. I interviewed the Archbishop on a weekly basis, what was going on, what were some of the programs that were important to him. And then we would talk about the readings for that week and how we could put them to use in our daily life. So, again, I put all that together, Don, in closing thoughts that I've loved radio since I was 10 or 12 years old, listening to baseball. The Lord didn't open that door that I could be a play-by-play baseball announcer, but he had a lot of other doors for me to walk through, and I'm still walking through them, and I give thanks every day for where he has put me and Kathy 50 years later.
We should note Kurt Lancaster also being inducted into the Hall of Fame in November as well. I'm sure you've worked with Kurt a lot during the years as well.
I sure have, yeah. When I got a call from Rich Hall, and Rich was one of those. He was at a sister station at WMT. He was up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I've gone back to 1973, working with Rich, sharing stories with each other. But he's the one who called to let me know that I had been elected to the Hall of Fame and gave me the news that I would be inducted with Kurt Lancaster. Yeah, Kurt, I'm anxious to hear his story. I don't know if you've talked to him already or not, but if you have, I want to make sure I listen to that interview. But it'll be good to he and I came about the same time, and like you and Mike Adams, and shared a lot of memories together. So I'm another blessing to share the night with him.
It's again all during the Night of Honors at the NEFB convention, that Thursday night of our convention coming up. Mark, sure appreciate the chance to connect, and again, congratulations.
Don, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity, and thanks for what you are doing now, picking up for as our historian. I always enjoy these interviews. Mike Adams has done so many, and people that you forgot as they were farm broadcasters. So thank you for your work, and I'm looking forward to that night in November. I have seven brothers and sisters, and a lot of them and their spouses and are going to try to be there. So it's going to be a great night for the Oppold family, and just very honored.